When millennials move from $600 iPhones to $300,000 houses. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. We were out buying new sheets and pillowcases, khaki pants, Adirondack chairs, Ford Fusions, and 2x4s last month. That's what the numbers suggest from the Commerce Department this morning, with retail sales up 0.9% in March. Bedding, clothing, furniture, cars did well. Analysts see this as new evidence it was the rotten weather holding back consumers earlier in the year. And with sales of building materials up 2.1% last month, this is in turn a sign of life in the real estate market. On Tuesdays, we consult Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company in St. Louis. Hello, Julie.
Morning, David.
Among other things, Julie, you see younger people getting interested in buying houses?
Well, the millennials, and this is the largest generation that we've had in our history, 80 million of them, are finally beginning to look to buying more than just iPhones, iPads, iWants, you name it. What they're really looking at is somehow moving out of mom and dad's house and getting their own first house. Of course, they're not making huge wages at this point. Probably the biggest source of their funds, mom and dad.
All right. When we're talking the millennials, we're talking people who hit the workforce after the new millennium. So they're 37 years old at the oldest, but often in their 20s. The other thing, right, is if a millennial wished to rent, the rents are going through the roof.
They're huge. Right now, millennials are paying almost half of their income to rent. It's making that first-time home buyer not have the available funds to have the down payment. But that's a huge incentive, one, for developers to build more rental housing, two, for the millennials to get their own property, because this is one period of time with low interest rates. It's actually cheaper to own than it is to rent.
But it's not just the down payment, right? Often we forget the closing costs on a real estate transaction.
Well, almost everybody is ignorant of the closing costs and all the other costs that go along with it. That's almost 2.5% of the total value of the mortgage. So this is an education process about what's going to happen when you do buy the house. And the first thing that happens is when you move in, what you have to fix.
You got to buy a stick of furniture. All sorts of costs ensue. Julie Neiman at Smith Moore & Company, thank you very much.
You bet.
Congress today will get an update on the F-35 jet, a program not yet in service, but one estimated to cost $1 trillion over its lifetime. Yes, he said trillion with a T as in trillion. Marketplace's Tim Fitzsimmons now on the anatomy of a cost overrun.
It wasn't supposed to end up like this. After the Cold War, there wasn't much money for new planes, so the Pentagon decided to design a fighter that every branch of the military would love. It was called the Common Affordable Lightweight Fighter Program, but it morphed into the Hydra, today known as the Joint Strike Fighter Program. Those F-35s are expensive, heavy, and unloved. The Pentagon says they'll officially enter service in July, but Mackenzie Eaglin at the American Enterprise Institute says even at this late stage, there are still problems.
There are engine issues, there are software issues, there are helmet issues.
Here's the painful irony. The F-35 was supposed to be cheap. By having one plane do everything, economies of scale, yada yada, costs would surely go down. But that didn't happen because each branch of the military had its own wish list of features. Ben Fitzgerald of the Center for a New American Security says despite the $1 trillion price tag, nobody's talking about scrapping the program anymore.
The debate around the F-35 tends to be more about how do we manage the cost.
But at this point, the F-35 is, as they say, too big to fail. In Washington, I'm Tim Fitzsimmons for Marketplace.
A listener wrote the other day saying, "What's all this complaining about the high U.S. dollar?" Yes, the high dollar can hurt U.S. exporters. It can erode U.S. corporate profits returning from overseas. But the listener is in the wine import business, and the high dollar is his friend. While the dollar is down this morning, a euro is still less than $1.07, which is the friend of the American overseas traveler, as Lauren Silverman of KERA in Dallas reports.
UT Austin student Nina Malhotra is taking advantage of the weaker euro.
I'm planning on traveling to Europe this summer. Germany, Switzerland, Italy, France, and Spain.
The price of everything from paella to train tickets has dropped.
It seemed more feasible now than it had another time that we had tried to do it.
According to TripAdvisor, the average nightly rate for a European hotel this summer is $133. That's compared to $164 last year. And the average cost of a one-week Europe trip has dropped by 11%. Catherine O'Kane of Brooklyn had budgeted $200 a night in Basque Country and Madrid.
We were pleasantly surprised to find hotels about $100 a night.
And with the extra pocket money,
We'll be able to do a lot more shopping. Any sort of events we want to do or see, we won't have to hesitate. If there's an opportunity to see Spanish guitar or flamenco, then we'll absolutely do so.
Which is going to please a lot of local businesses in Europe. The dollar surge will also benefit travel agencies and tour companies. Paul Wiseman is president of Trafalgar Guided Vacations.
So we're having a very good year to Europe. You know, we're seeing double-digit growth in Italy and Great Britain, and I'm sure that's on the back of a very strong US dollar.
Okay, but is a 90-cent cheaper café au lait enough to tempt people to go to Paris instead of Mexico? Who better to ask than Paula Serrano, a travel agent in the city of Paris, Texas?
So, do more people want to visit the real Paris?
No, it is not picked up. I sell more Mexico than anything.
After all, in Cancun, a dollar gets you not just one, but 15 pesos. In Dallas, I'm Lauren Silverman for Marketplace.
And ahead of tomorrow's deadline, one of my colleagues here was grappling with his taxes. Seems he won big on Wheel of Fortune during the 2014 tax year. But did our Josh get his estimated taxes right? If you miss our discussion on the air, it's at marketplace.org. Keywords, winner takes all minus taxes. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.